Create Art Podcast, KDOI Rebroadcast, Theater as Art. Hello, friends. This is Timothy Keem O'Brien, your head instigator at Create Art Podcast, where I bring my 20 years in art and education to help you tame your inner critic and create more than you consume. In 2020, I am rebroadcasting my former podcast, KDOI Podcast, here, so you can catch up on what I've been doing for the last 4 years. Now, KDOI Podcast, which stands for Kimo's Den of Iniquity, was my first serious attempt at podcasting after spending many years just creating content without regard to the final product. Now, KDOI started in 2016 and had 3 seasons until I closed it down in 2019. And I wanted to make sure that these gems didn't get neglected to my external hard drive. So here you go. It's going to be interviews, commentary, and projects that you can do for yourself. So enjoy these rebroadcasts of and create more than you consume. And in today's episode, old episode actually, we discussed with Heather Myers her history of theater and starting out in acting and moving into stage management, directing, and new play development. Now, at the time, she was working with American Blues Theater and with Veteran Art Project. As she developed and directed my first play, Green Curtain, for the Ripped from the Pages project with American Blues Theater. And in here, she's stressing the importance of telling stories and passing along these stories to new generations. Now, this was a pleasure to have. This conversation was between two good friends. And you can really tell it when you listen to it. So I hope you enjoy it. So much for tuning in to KDOI. That's right, Kimo's Den of Iniquity. I am your host this fine, fine evening, Timothy Keem O'Brien. And that bump in music again was DJ Vulture. He's been with KDOI since the beginning of it. And folks, I have a wonderful guest here for you today. Now, this person found me in Chicago and actually put out some of my greatest work she's responsible for. I've known her for a number of years. I moved away from Chicago, and now I have her here with us this fine, fine evening. I'd like to introduce to you my good friend and my big sister, Heather Meyer. How you doing, Heather?
I'm doing great, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, obviously, we have different last names, but when I run into people that I admire that do wonderful work, I like to say, that's the chosen family that I have, so that's why you're my big sister.
Oh, see, you're the best.
I do what I can.
You're the best.
Now, can I borrow the car tomorrow night?
Only if you fill it up with gas first.
Okay, all right, I can do that. Not a problem. So, Heather, let's go back down memory lane, shall we? We met in Chicago, of all places. Of all places you're going to meet in Chicago, right?
Of all places.
Why not? It's a good place. It's a toddling town, Chicago. I heard somebody say that one day. But we met with the was it the Warrior Art Studio or the Vet Art Project?
Yeah. Well, it was a little bit of both. Yeah. It was a little bit of both because I think it changed hands and it changed titles. But we didn't change. We stayed the same cool cats that we always were. Well, so
when you're fine wine, you only get better with age.
You know it. I'm just saying. Put some cheese on it.
Well, that's what the show is all about today. A lot of cheese.
Oh, man. Oh. Okay, so yeah, you and me, like, you wrote some fantastic things, and we got to know each other through some workshops with the Vet Art Project. And I always felt inspired working with you because as a director, there's a lot of things that I don't experience firsthand. And this was a chance for me to kind of get a little bit closer to someone who does something for a living that I never had the courage to do, you know, which is something you did so selfishly. And to be able to support you as an artist is, you know, it's probably one of the greatest gifts.
Absolutely. And yourself, yeah. You're a very talented artist yourself in the theater world for all the stuff that you do. And that's why I'm inspired with you. I mean, being directing is an art form in the theater world all into itself. It's a whole other mindset. Myself, you know, I've got some background in directing and lighting design. But what else do you do in the theater world? Because I know you, but, you know, the 30,000 fans that we have out there, they don't know you yet. And they
right. Well, you know, I started out acting in high school. I went to college and I figured out I really loved the backstage world a lot. I directed some short things there. And one of my other passions is stage managing. So I earned most of my bread and butter early on in my career as a stage manager. But the whole time I watched the directors that I worked with and called all their wisdom. You know, so it was kind of like getting your master's degree and still getting a paycheck. So I stage manage, I direct, but I also work in new play development. For me, reading a new play, it's like opening a gift, opening a brand new present. It's something new and shiny. And you just never know when you're going to find that diamond. And be able to help bring a story to life that is just, it's going to touch people and entertain people. So that's one of my passions. I love to read. So it became a natural fit for me to kind of go into play development. And that's something we worked on together with your scripts, was developing the work for an audience. So those are my main passions.
Gotcha. Now, yeah. You mentioned that you do a lot of reading. I know this year, in good old 2018, my wife and I have decided to challenge each other for how many books we can read in the year. She says she can do 75, and I can do 30. It's at the time of this recording, we're February the 1st. She's got 14 books done, and I'm struggling through the third.
Yeah.
But granted, I'm finishing Frankenstein right now, and she's reading some, you know, vampire trashy novel kind of stuff. So,
Yeah, content, man, content.
Exactly.
See,
exactly.
You should go by page number.
Oh my God! Well, you know, I've got a few big ones on my year this year. I think I've got some, not some Tolstoy. No, I do have some Tolstoy, and you know, some big Russian names and Russian romance novels and all that kind of good stuff. So, it's going to take me a minute. I might not get through 20.
Well, see, she got you, man. She suckered you.
Yes, she did. And she's doing audiobooks too, so she's not even reading. She's just listening to half of these books.
Oh, now, see, you got to set better ground rules for this thing, my friend.
This is the first time I did this. I didn't have your wisdom to, you know, I should have called you up and said, hey, sis, how do I do this? How do I do this?
Oh. So, yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, have you set a goal for yourself this year in doing that, or?
Reading? Yeah. Well, you know, as you know, I'm with American Blues Theater Company in Chicago. Woo! Right. Shout out. Shout out.
That's right. American Blues Theater Company, not sponsoring the show, but that's okay. They're a fantastic theater company. I give to them. I donate. So, folks, go
check
them
out. And you bowl for them, too, man. Well, you bowled a turkey, remember?
That was a wonderful time. Was I wearing a dress that for that show or for that? No, I wasn't wearing a dress that time. No, never mind. That was something else. Because it wasn't on a Thursday.
That's supposed to tell. So for American Blues Theater, I am a reader for their Blue Ink contest. And this contest is for strictly for unpublished scripts that can get entered into this contest. And I'm on a panel of judges who read scripts. So I read a lot between July and November. I fit in quite a few scripts in that time. I'm always reading stuff. Things come into the theater or ensemble members have suggestions about scripts and I'll read them so I can have an intelligent conversation about this script, whether it would fit our theater or not. So there's something really great about reading a script because there's this excitement of, what is this audience going to see? It takes me on a journey too, just like it takes anybody in an audience on a journey. I love being an audience member. So when I read something that's good and I get sucked into that world, there's nothing like it in the world for me. It's one of those things where I'm kind of the ultimate audience member where I'm begging to be entertained. I want to read a great script. So that's a huge passion for me. And that's one of the reasons why working with the Vet Art Project was great, because we got to work together on something just like that. Education is really important to me, and just having a playground for people to work in and feel that freedom to be able to work without being judged and just trying an idea out. You never know where that's going to lead. You have to have that open door where you can open it and present something. You never know when it's going to touch an audience member or the right thing at the right time to say, where other people can get behind you and say, I feel that way too. There's something very, very powerful about that. But I'm in the business of supporting people so that they can try to achieve those things.
Excellent.
In a supported way. So.
Well, and having, you know, people in the audience is vital for any artist, because that's A, how we make our money and support ourselves and are able to do it. But being that audience member yourself, you get inspired, and being a director, being a stage manager and reading scripts and deciding which ones you guys are going to produce. And there's ones that you're not going to produce.
Does that mean they're bad scripts?
No,
that just means they're maybe not the right fit for that season. Or maybe there's another theater whose mission fits it better.
Right.
So for every struggling playwright out there, I just wish they would know that a rejection doesn't reflect necessarily on your work. You know, it just might not be the right fit for that particular theater. It does not mean it's a bad piece at all. But it's easy to get frustrated out there when there's more rejection than there is yeses.
Right.
It's very easy to get frustrated and to let go of that dream. And that's it.
Well, and it's kind of scary too, because myself, I'm writer, painter, podcaster, father, mm-hmm. I do 30 million hats is what I wear. So me, I'm used to the rejection, but for a budding person, for somebody that's like, oh, I'm going to dip my toe in it, and to get that first rejection letter, being an old pro at it, I'm like, yeah, they rejected me. They at least looked at it and said,
they at least looked at it, yeah, right? At least they responded.
Exactly. Because a lot of times you get no response.
Yeah.
Being somebody that I like being on stage as well, and whether the response is good, bad, the one that I can't stand is indifference. I'll get on stage and do anything for a laugh or a, oh my god, he did that. I.e., dressing up Thursday transvestite night, but we won't talk about that.
Well, right, it's the secret.
Oh, that's right. Everybody reminds. Everybody I've interviewed reminded me, Tim, we don't talk about transvestite Thursday. It's like Fight Club, but nobody talks about Fight Club anymore. It's transvestite Thursday. I don't know.
Fight Club? What are you talking about?
I have no
There's
idea.
No Fight Club.
Okay. That's why I'm having brain surgery next week, because I got to forget this stuff. I got nothing.
Oh, man.
So, with being in the art world like you are, for you, what's the thrill? What keeps you in this?
Oh, there's so many things that keep me in it. But mostly I want to make sure that we never lose our ability to have our freedom of speech, whether it be through a piece of art, through theater, through music. It's important to tell stories. It's important to write things down so that we don't forget and repeat things again, because, you know, as a society, we repeat a lot of horrible mistakes. It can be very tragic, but you keep trying to persevere. The other thing is we're both parents, right?
Absolutely.
And so we want to make sure that our kids have the same sort of freedoms and rights and storytelling abilities and the sense to carry on into a new generation. It's important to mark where you are in history, but also build towards that future. I love to be entertained. That's the only reason why. It's the selfish reasons that I'm in theaters, that I like to be entertained, you know. It's selfish, but it's so fun and it's so rewarding. What's the next story we're going to tell? What's the story we haven't told yet? Through whose lens are we going to tell future stories? What are the stories that are going untold? Those are the big things that I struggle with, and it's trying to obtain those answers. That's why I keep going, for sure. So for selfish reasons, I like to be entertained, and for inspirational reasons that, you know, I like to be challenged. I love going to see something that makes me think so hard afterwards. You know, you're driving home after a show going, oh, God damn, I just made this connection between this and this.
Oh, yeah.
Or I totally don't agree with the central idea of this show. And I don't agree with this. I don't agree with that. And maybe it was someone who's on the other side of the issue. It inspires all sorts of conversations. And the ones that are truly special are the ones that that change something in you.
Exactly.
Having
that NPR driveway moment. It is a wonderful thing, especially after a show, because, you know, when you're working on a show, and maybe you get this, I've had this many times, you're working on it day in and day out, and, you know, you think you know it really well, and then suddenly, you know, an actor says a line, and you're just like, holy shit, that whole scene just changed, and I've been directing it like this, you know, I've known this piece since I was, you know, knee high to myself, and I thought it was this, and a director and an actor says it a different way, and you're like, okay, well, I need to change Transvestite Thursday to Transvestite Tuesday now. And it's, you know.
Or, and sometimes too, you can get just used to what's in front of you. There were days when, after shows that I stage managed, there would be audience members who hadn't moved out of their seats yet because it had touched them in such a way they just couldn't get up yet. And you forget when it's your first time having that experience how powerful certain things can be. So working in the industry, sometimes you forget the impact that something has on another person because you're just trying to do your job and make sure everything goes well. And because, you know, at the end of the day, theater is a business.
It is.
And our business is to entertain and to sell seats, get more people in. You got to have a good product though.
And the immediate nature and the intimacy with theater, I think is, I want to say, and I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to be selfish here myself, is only matched close. Well, I don't want to say matched evenly, but with podcasting, with radio, when you have somebody in your ears and you're that close to somebody, with theater, you can, you know, reach out and touch the actors. It's not recommended,
Right.
Unless you're watching one of my shows or a show for you and you're directing it. By the way, you got a script coming to you about, you know, the audience touching the actors, you know.
Oh. Well, and for sure, you're so bad. But for sure, I mean, being in the live audience, there's an electricity that you can't reproduce any way else. You know, whether you're seeing a great band, or seeing a great piece of theater, or, you know, a symphony being played, you know, it's that electricity you feel that you can't reproduce and you can't always explain, but you can experience it for sure.
Absolutely.
And that's what keeps people coming back, you know. And there's lots of voices out there right now that aren't being represented.
Oh, sure.
And it's a frustrating time because there's a lot of people who don't feel heard and are very scared.
Yep.
And I think sometimes entertainment is the only thing that's going to get us through. Yeah. You know, after 9/11, one of the first things that made us feel normal again is that David Letterman came back on, you know, and Saturday Night Live started to come back. It's things that are familiar that started to make you feel normal again after a horrible experience.
Well, when they turned the lights back on in Broadway, because every show pretty much went dark. Yeah. Then, you know, it's just like, now we got to turn, you know, we got the show must go on.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, and life has to go back on. Mm-hmm. And the only way that you can get back to feeling some sort of sense of normalcy or community is going out and doing things together.
Bingo.
You know, whether you're going to see something or you're marching together or whatever it is that you do to get out there and be a part of it. I hope people don't stop, you know, and I hope artists' voices don't feel muted and frustrated and put that script in the top drawer and shut it and put it away for 10 years. You know, I hope people will keep persevering and will become stronger as artists, as human beings, as, you know, people on this planet Earth.
Absolutely. Well, you are definitely preaching to the choir here. I'm just going to sit back and let you preach for the next half hour, 20 hours.
Oh,
you know,
my
whatever.
Gosh.
I'll put the collection plate out. Not a problem.
Oh, please. The biggest thing you can do is just go out there and experience stuff.
Yeah.
Even if it's out of your comfort zone. I do that all the time. You know, I'm nervous about talking to you right now, but I'm trying to make the best of it, right?
Did you get that case of whiskey that I sent you?
Oh, come on,
man. I'm sorry.
Damn it.
Okay, that's another thing I can't talk about. Jeez. Okay, Heather, what can I talk about? Well, and I think it's important for all of us, because, you know, we have a lot of listeners, and this whole podcast was brought up because I saw a lot of people out there, a lot of the soldiers that I work with, saying, hey, you know, I can't draw, I can't paint, I'm too scared to get on stage. You know, it's one of those things that definitely go support the arts. And one of the side benefits of being supported by the arts is you get inspired, do something,
mm-hmm.
go and do something. Absolutely.
Yep. Well, you know, all it does for anybody who's afraid to put their toe in the water, they just need to break the seal once, you know, and then that's over. You've experienced and you kind of know better what you're doing the next time. So for anybody who might be listening, who is worried about dipping your toe in, maybe not being good enough, how are you ever going to know if you don't? So that's kind of what I try to do in theater, is to say you owe it to yourself to try.
Exactly. And who determines what's good and what's not? Well, the audience member does, you know, and you can't control, you know, one night. Well, that's the thing I love about theater. No two nights are the same, but you're showing the same show. But one night you get the audience reaction and it's fantastic and they're roaring in the seats and it's just, you know, pandemonium. And then the next night you got crickets.
Right.
You know. And the actors are saying the same words, and a lot of times they're doing it with, you know, similar emotions, but it's just that audience. And you can't control that. So, I don't even try to.
I think the actors, next to playwrights, the actors have the hardest job in theater because it's hard. They're out there without a net.
Yeah.
You know, so it's, I think it's very hard. And you have to deal with a live audience too. There's only so much that, you know, your box office person can help you with. You know? So much the stage manager can do. But it's, I think it's hard to have the courage to churn out the stories, and it's hard to be the ones to stand up there and tell them.
Yeah. It really does.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? But coming in a close third is going to be the stage manager and the director. And the reason why I say that, and it's not to, you know, blow smoke up your ass.
You did that a long time ago. What are you talking about? Ago.
Come on. That's when I smoked cigarettes. Now I now I vape all the time, and you know I'm blowing smoke all over everybody. But no, what was I going to say? Okay, I'll edit this part out.
The stage manager and the director. Yeah, Dolly, they got a hard job because, you know, I think the director has to make sure they have a good, solid, big picture idea so that, you know, everybody can kind of get on board with this concept that works for this show. So conceptually, the designers have something tangible to design after, you know, and also something for actors to develop their characters after. And the director really needs to always keep in mind that big picture. How does this all tie together in the end? And the stage manager just to make sure that the train keeps running.
Absolutely.
You know, there's a misconception that the stage manager is a big bossy boss with the big bossy pants. But that's not necessarily true. I mean, certainly the conductor of a train is the one who says, okay, we're going now.
Yeah.
And we go down the path. But, yeah, no. That's just the person saying go.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, there's not a hierarchy backstage necessarily, but there's just certain roles that we got to naturally fall into so nobody gets run over backstage. So we keep everybody safe, that everybody stays healthy, and working conditions are as they should be. It's extremely important to have a safe working environment. There's lots of stories happening right now in the news about people being taken advantage of. And it's easily done in the entertainment industry. So it's kind of people who are in certain positions, it's really their job to put their foot down and say, this is unsafe. This is not how we do it. This is not professional. So that people are protected when they're at work, when they should be fearless to be able to do their job well.
Absolutely. The stage manager to me is kind of like the person that keeps you on time, your confidant, your shrink, your EEO person.
Well, we make sure, you know, if your britches got a hole in them that they get sewn up, you know. You know.
You can't be walking around with your ass hanging out like that.
No, you know? I mean, unless it's written in the script.
Well,
but,
it's
going to
be in my script, that's for damn sure.
Get some chaps up there, my friend.
How did you know that I was wearing my assless chaps tonight?
Oh, see? Because I'm your big sister. I know everything. Come on.
And thanks for getting that for me for Christmas. I appreciate it.
Well, you know, it's no big deal, but it's pleather. It's not real leather, you know.
Oh. does Vaseline hurt pleather? Because I heard it's good for leather, but I don't know about pleather.
It'll all work itself out in the wash, my friend.
I got to wash these? Oh, God. Okay. All right. That's going in the show notes.
Man.
First show that you ever did, do you remember it?
First show I ever did, like my first experience ever in the theater.
Absolutely. What got you into it?
I was in eighth grade. And they had never done a school play before. And there's a bunch of us who were like, yeah, we want to try this acting thing. And we did a murder mystery. And still to this day, I know some of those people. You know, we still see each other and talk to each other at reunions and stuff on Facebook. We still talk about that show. They painted a fake mustache, curly Q mustache on me. I was like the narrator. Yeah. It was a murder mystery. It was great fun. We had a blast. But, you know, we didn't have any sense of fear at that time.
Right.
Or, you know, there was really kind of like not the peer pressure that you get when you get a little bit older. You start becoming a little self-conscious, right? Uh-huh. I mean, that's why I got out of acting. I got scared up there. Uh-huh. It's hard to do that job. Are you memorizing all those lines? No. No. Oh,
if you can bullshit some of the lines, you don't have to memorize them all. Come on.
Right. So we, you know, we had a great time doing that show. And it was a sense of togetherness, something that we were all doing together. And people really enjoyed the show. And that always stuck with me, that camaraderie, that sense of community, that sense of pulling together to do something. That always stayed with me. I got away from theater for a little while. I got, you know, kind of into sports. I thought maybe I'd get into something else. But then when I got into high school, it sucked me right back in. And I started, you know, doing some shows out there. I'm not much of a singer.
Okay.
So I did all the straight plays. And I can't remember the name of the show that I was in, but I played an old lady. But I can't remember the name of the show. But my character's name was Eliza Gant. Look, Homeward Angel. That's what it was. Okay. Look, Homeward Angel. I was Eliza Gant in that. And that was a lot of lines to memorize. And when I got my senior year, I got to direct in high school a short play. We did a short play festival. And I directed one. And there were some other student directors. And that stuck with me, too. And then right before I graduated, we did Miss Jubilee's Day, which is, you know, it's like the queenie gets crowned. You know, it's a beauty pageant thing. And so they needed somebody backstage to sit on the curtain and be on headset. And boom, they threw me in there. And I was like the stage manager backstage suddenly. I didn't know what I was doing, but I had a good time doing it. So when I got into college, I had to audition like all the other acting students did, even though I was going more towards directing. They still had to do monologues, and I had to sing, and I had to dance and all that stuff. And they still took me, which was great. You know?
There you go.
And I directed a lot of short pieces in college, because there isn't necessarily an opportunity to do a main stage always, but you can always do stuff in a lab studio sort of situation. Oh, yeah. I went to a smaller school, so they made us do everything. I was stitching in the costume shop. I was painting sets. I was directing. I was stage managing. Sometimes I would act still, but you know, at that level, the acting is, they're so good, even at the collegiate level.
Yeah.
You can see it in people who are going to go on and do well in their career, even at that level.
Okay.
So I just kept doing more and more things backstage until, I think it was my sophomore year, I was an assistant stage manager on one of our big main stage shows. And I watched the stage manager work, and I was like, yeah, this works for me. Because when I was in high school, I had to take this test. It was high school, no, it was middle school. I had to take this personality test. We all had to take it.
Oh,
and
okay.
You got feedback saying what you do well at in your career. Mm-hmm. You know, a doctor or a fireman or a policeman or a teacher. Mm-hmm. I got secretary.
Okay.
What kind of bullshit is this? I don't want to be a secretary. You don't want to work in a cubicle. But it was the skills that... like that kind of come naturally for you, even being organized, you know, being knowing how to keep things on track,
right,
understanding how to talk to people, collaborating. You have to do all those things, I suppose, to be a good secretary. Mm-hmm. And it translated over into stage management. So we didn't have a formal stage management degree at school yet.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of helped write the book for it.
Nice.
And now there is. And across the country now, you see a lot of stage management programs now. They're more formalized. I mean, we're talking when the dinosaurs were walking on the earth, when I was, you know, stage managing. So, you know, I've even seen this career develop much more since I've been out of school. And even the technology is just amazing to me. The touch screens and QLab and, you know, I had to learn how to draft by hand. And then when I graduated, the CAD programs came out, the CAD drafting programs came out where everything's on the computer and you're not going to swipe all of your work, your pencil drawings with one wet hand and ruin the whole thing. It doesn't happen on a computer, you know, and you can make adjustments very easy. Oh, yeah. So it's really developed. It's come from running sound on reel to reel.
Oh my God.
To something. Yeah. I mean, that's what it was when I first got into the professional world. It was reel to reel and we had X and Y boards and we had wall switches. I mean, I was running stuff with my feet and my tiptoes and, you know, hope to God this is going to work, you know. And so now the technology is so streamlined. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So even the theater industry has come so far. There's some houses where they don't even take lights. They don't strike their lights anymore. They just push a button and you reposition it to where you need to go, you know. So there's some jobs that have even been eliminated. Exactly. It's much easier, you know. So.
But you can never eliminate the lighting designer. You can't do it.
No, you can't. You will never be able to go away from designers at all. Absolutely. Because it's part of the conceptual team that makes all the elements work. We will never get to a point where you can roboticize, if that's a word, emotions.
Right.
You know, emotions are true things that we have that come out from our heart and our brains and things like that. And there's no machine that can duplicate that ever.
No.
So that's what makes designers so good. And the timing of a good lighting designer and just the artistry that they do with lights alone is really amazing. That's something that a computer will never be able to do.
Well, you know, the very first lighting designer.
You are.
No. Even bigger than me. I know it's hard to imagine somebody bigger than me. I know this. But there are a couple of people that are more important than me.
What?
God was the first lighting designer. And you know he was a lighting designer because he created light and he said it was good. He didn't need anybody else to go, oh yeah, it's really good. No. It's fucking good.
That was good. I'm keeping this one.
Yeah, they can't swear in the Bible, but I know. As a lighting designer, he said, oh, that's fucking good.
That's awesome.
I didn't mean to fucking do that, but that's fucking good.
That's good. That's brilliant.
Let me go ahead and make a world. I'll be a set designer now, too. Look at this. Oh, costume design. I'm a director now. I got two actors. Fantastic. Boom. And now you have us in 2018. Done and done.
There you go. I don't even have to show up to work now. You got this whole thing figured out.
Well, see, I got this all from, you know, the God on Facebook, you know. And he's verified, too. He's verified by Facebook that he is God. He told me all this. Yeah.
Well, you know, if it's on Facebook, you know it's true.
It's got to be true, unless it's on the Onion's Facebook site. And then we know it's fake news.
Oh, don't even get started.
So, that's, you know, your start into theater and all that is a fantastic story, and it's a very noble story. Mine is not that noble. I don't think I ever shared this with you. So, freshman in high school, didn't know what I was going to do. Had no clue. Hey, I took an acting class. I took an intro to drama class, not even an acting class. And I'm a big guy, you know. And they're like, hey, we're doing Guys and Dolls. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Don't make me a doll, but I'll be a guy.
I'll be a guy. And they're like, well, I don't know, you know, Transvestite Tuesday is coming up real soon.
Put some tap shoes on, and it'll be fine.
I can do it. I can do tap. But no, they're like, you know, we need somebody to run the pin rail, which is the guy that brings in the drops and does the main curtain. I've never done this before. I'm like, I got to pull a rope. And that's it. When you tell me to pull a rope, I got to pull a rope. Okay, I'll go pull a rope, whatever. What the fuck? And it was closing night. And Adelaide, now remember, I'm a freshman in high school. Adelaide is a senior, beautiful blonde, beautiful, gorgeous, you know, all decked out and everything like that. And closed the show. It was last night. And right before she goes and does her bow, and I have to open up the curtain again, she comes by, plants one on me. Just plants one on me. And I'm just like, oh, this is great. And she's like, I'll see you at the cast party.
Ooh. Max Daddy Timmy.
From then on. And you know, we had our little cast party thing. We had our stuff. And they're like, you know, Tim, he does it for the cast parties. Does theater for the cast parties. I'm like, of course. You know, first show, knock it out of the ballpark. Done.
Mm-hmm. Now the truth comes out. You just wanted to go to the cast party.
Yeah. And that was a fun time. And I can't legally talk about that yet because the statute of limitations hasn't fallen yet. So that's for another show.
Good Lord. I'm tuning into that one.
That one will be rated MA. It's not for the kids. That's excellent. Well, I definitely want to talk to you about development as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've let the cat out of the bag. You and I have worked together. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
But for that development piece now, like I said, you know, some of our folks out there that are listening are like, hey, you know, I want to put my toe in and all that kind of good stuff. And in our pre-show, I remember we were talking about, because I'm in Fredericksburg now, and there's one of everything, as opposed to Chicago, right, where there's a million of everything.
There's a million of everything, yeah.
And, you know, if you run into a bad theater there or a bad show, okay, we just, you know, go two doors down, you can get a good show. You know?
Right.
But
right,
like here in Fredericksburg, we've got, you know, our little dinky experimental theater. We've got our musical theater, dinner theater. We've got our college theater, high school theaters, da-da-da-da-da. And the small shows and all that kind of good stuff. How does somebody that doesn't have a whole lot of experience but wants to get involved in it, and this could be, you know, like a teenager, you know, a freshman in high school, and yes, you too can get kissed by the most beautiful girl in the school if you do theater. but, you know, how would you recommend somebody kind of approach that and get into that? Any writer, actor, director, you know, because you've done it all in the theater world.
Right. Well, I'm not a writer. I'm not a writer at all, but okay. Not at all. I mean, that's the thing. Like I leave certain things to certain professionals to do. I mean, can I have an opinion on it? You betcha. But I think one of the best things you can do as a writer is either find like-minded people, you know, whether it's a writing group, or taking a class at the community college or in high school. If there's, you know, you could get into journalism is oftentimes a first step. Getting onto the speech team is a great first step. So if we're talking about a high school student, that's a great place. Speech is a great place to get started in terms of writing for yourself or performance. Or learning how to take a bigger piece and hone it into a smaller piece, sort of an idea. It's kind of learning the steps of how does the structure of a play work? And how do you write dialogue? Those are the biggest things that you kind of have to figure out. So whether it's through taking a class or just writing and having other people read your things and give you feedback, those are oftentimes the best ways to get started. There's very few theaters out there that actually have the manpower, the time, and the resources to be able to break down scripts for each play that they get in and give you some sort of an overview or an idea or a critique or something like that. There's some places that for a small fee will do that for you.
Right.
In Chicago, like Chicago Dramatists would be a great place for beginning writers to start go and see things and start to become a part of a community because they're all about classes. Mm-hmm. There's most likely, but I don't know for sure, I don't have any real advice, but there's most likely something online you could probably start becoming a part of too.
Yeah.
So it really is kind of, if you're at the very introductory level, is to take some sort of a class so that you learn structure, so that you learn how to write that dialogue, so you learn how a script works. You understand all of its parts so that you can apply that to what you want to do with theater, what you want to do with telling your story. So, you know, in terms of where you're going to find somebody in Fredericksburg, Sometimes it can be as easy as going to the public library and saying, this is one of my interests. Is there anything in the community? Are there any writing groups? That's always a good step too, is consulting your public library. Or if it's a theater that you like and you admire their work, you can always see if they have any writing programs, or if they have maybe an internship that you can start kind of learning how theater works. There's lots of beginning opportunities like that I think could be useful tools. And in terms of, let's say someone's maybe a couple of levels up and they've written a couple of plays and they feel a little bit more confident that they can write a script that somebody might want to produce, the best thing you can do is kind of find the theaters that you might want to submit to and would take a submission without an agent. That's another conversation. But finding places you can submit to that fit the mission or the main idea of your play. Does your play fit this place? Then, and they'll take it, send it to them, because you never know. It's hard. You know, you can also submit to play contests, and there's two different mindsets, I think, for writers. I shouldn't speak for them, but I kind of, this is the gist I get from it, is that there are some play contests where you have to pay a submission fee and some you don't.
Right.
So it's, you have to figure out how, what you're good with. Mm-hmm. You know, if you maybe submit something for $5 or $10, but you might win $1,000. I mean, geez.
Hey, that's not bad at all. That's
are you going to buy that lottery? You know, you can buy that lottery ticket, because you never know. Mm-hmm. And there's many playwrights who have an agent. And that agent will contact theaters and send their work to what they feel like is an appropriate theater that would fit that piece well. So there's different degrees of what theaters will and can take. So did that kind of address how do you get started in this crazy little playwriting business?
Absolutely, it did. Absolutely. Okay. And there's, you know, with theater, there's a ton of, yeah, there's some automation that's been done, you know, on the technical side of the house, but there's a lot of jobs that you can do in theater. So, you know, you're a secretary in an office somewhere, and you're like, man, I always wanted to, you know, go behind the scenes and see what really happens. Become a stage manager. Boom.
Oh, yeah.
You know, oh,
for sure.
Verbal skills.
Or work on a crew backstage. You know, there's costume crews, there's a set crews, there's, you know, all sorts of backstage action that happens.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, heck, you know, the stage manager for one of those crazy shows that they do in Vegas. Oh, and things like that. The Circus Olay shows.
Yep.
There's one of them where half the show is underwater. Well, their stage manager had to be scuba dive certified.
Oh, yeah.
To be able to call that part of the show, because they were underwater the whole time. There's, you know, just a gazillion things out there when you think about it.
You know, and there's a million ideas out there. I always go back to, you know, the whole Sharknado thing. Somebody somewhere said, hey, let's put a tornado and sharks together and see what the fuck happens. We'll make it.
And see what happens. Oh, my God. And that thing is, I mean, was there number 5 of that out right now?
At least.
And every time my kids see one that's on there, oh, my God, it's Sharknado. Let's watch it. Because it's, I don't know what it is. It's just, it's crazy. But it is really got a cult following.
It does.
It's crazy.
Anything you put in your mind, you know, if it sits there and entertains you, it's probably going to entertain somebody else. You know,
yeah.
You know, I've got some pretty wild ass ideas, and I've got a lot of friends that go, yeah, that's kind of crazy. Let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Right. Show them, why not?
Let's do that. Yes, please, more.
So that brings me to my next question. Podcast that I'm going to do, are you available for that? I'm kidding.
Oh, stop.
We can get an extra 3 hours in the day and get this knocked out. Absolutely. I'll requisition it from the Army. It's not a problem.
Oh, yeah. And we'll wait for that paperwork to go through.
Well, you know, I've been waiting for my jacuzzi for 3 years now for my office. I've got hope, though. I'm keeping hope alive. As soon as we get Obama back in office, I'll get my jacuzzi. I know it. It can be Michelle. It can be one of his kids. It can be the dog. I don't care. We're going to get another Obama in office.
Yeah, right. Yeah, or somebody who... Okay, I shouldn't make this political.
Go ahead. I just did.
Look, it's this transition is hard.
Yeah.
And I already said this, but you know, people are frightened, people feel unheard. So it's a very hard time. And it's a very hard time to sometimes realize things about someone you thought you knew, and you definitely are in different sides of the fence on issues. That has changed how society behaves towards each other. There's a lot of ugly underbelly that's seeping up, and there's been so many people who have worked so hard to clean up America, and so to see that work start coming down and being destroyed and being dismantled, it's hard. I know not everybody in your listening audience may agree with me, but, you know, it's...
Well, if they don't, I'm going to poke their eyeballs out, so...
Yeah, well, undoubtedly, they're probably not listening, so... And if you are... Yeah, and you know what? There's never going to be another Obama, ever.
No.
Not like that gentleman was, ever. So, yeah, there you go. Soapbox!
That's a beautiful thing, because we can do that at any time. We can bring up the soapbox. But I think that, you know, with all the stuff that's going on currently, I think, you know, going back to our core of we're artists and we need to express ourselves. I don't want to have to express myself. You know, I don't have to want to write plays and do podcasts, you know, that we have to refight the battles that have already been fought before we, you know, you and I even got here. There's a bunch of battles fought. I don't want to have to rehash all of that up again, but if I got to, we know that, you know, we've got a talent that can do that and hopefully overcome the crap that's going on. That's my soapbox.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Don't fall off that damn thing. You could get slippery, you know.
Well, funny you mentioned that. Me and my old age, you didn't tell me it was going to be like this when I got older.
You got to watch the damn hip, man. Oh, don't you fall and break that damn hip.
Oh, my gosh. I was walking off the train, and, you know, I'm Chicago, well, from Rockford, but I know snow, I know ice. I get off the train, been here in Fredericksburg for 4 or 5 years. I look at ice, I fall right on my butt.
Mm-hmm.
What the hell is up with that?
Kryptonite.
And mm-hmm. I used to walk Michigan Avenue in the middle of winter, not a problem. Wind blowing, whipping, you know, small dogs, you know, impaled on stop signs. Didn't bother me one bit. I look at a little patch of ice in Fredericksburg, I'm on my back.
You've gotten soft, my man.
I need a good soft. 40 inches of snow in 24 hours. I need that now.
Damn.
But I looked at the weather. You guys are getting like 10 inches of snow in a day or two, so you can have it.
Well, I think it's going to be right in time for Super Bowl Sunday. Great.
Yeah.
Let's mix some snow in with all the drunks that are going to be on the road. Great.
Well, the way I look at it is, you know, get your food now. Because if that were to happen here, they would, you know, there'd be a run on all the grocery stores, and there wouldn't be bread or milk anywhere within 20 miles. But yeah, that's what y'all should do. Just everybody in Chicago, you can listen. Well, you'll hear this probably in about 2 months. But regardless, the night that you hear this, go get some ribs. Go get some Harold's chicken. Oh, you got to get Harold's on 87th Street. That's the place to go.
Plug.
Harold's Chicken from Chicago. Another group that's not sponsoring me yet, but they will. Go to Harold's.
But they will.
Go to Harold's. they'll, you know, tell them I sent you. And they'll be like, who the fuck sent you?
Whatever, Brother Tim. Okay.
All right. So, here's the big question. What's mm-hmm. going on for you now? What are you involved in now? I know what you're involved in, but my 30,000 listeners don't know what you're involved in.
Well, right now we are starting a lot of season planning. So we're reading a lot of scripts, trying to do season planning. Really right now, this is a little bit of an off time for me, which is great. Things aren't slamming for me, but you know, I'll be involved in a couple of short play festivals. We're going to do readings of some of the Blue Ink winners in a festival. Nice. We'll do the Ripped Festival, which is short pieces ripped from the headlines. And yeah, that's really it. I'm trying to get the kids through the end of the school year. Oh, yeah. You know, I got somebody making the trip over to high school next year. So that's a whole new world for me.
It is.
You know, as a parent, it's a very intimidating time when you don't know what the hell you're doing, which is me. You know, I don't know what the hell I'm doing, but I'll figure it out. Second kid will come around and be, thanks. Mm-hmm. She's all broken in now. Thanks.
There you go. You mean you didn't read the manual? They didn't give you the manual for the kids?
I threw it away.
Oh, okay. All right.
I don't read those things. Yeah, so right now it's a little quiet, but I know I'm going to get busy pretty soon. Yeah, mostly reading scripts. Mm-hmm. Well, always kind of reading scripts. So
there you go.
Reading.
Well, my script's already in the mail, all 15 of them. So there you go.
Yeah, see? There you go.
All right, Heather, we've come to the infamous time of the podcast here. It's the Satanic Seven Questions.
Dun, dun, dun. Ba-da-da-dun.
Oh, see, I got sound design. There we go.
There you go.
Am I going to have to charge? Are you going to charge me union rates, or do I get a special friend discount?
No, you'll get the family discount. Okay. You'll get the family discount.
So that means double the union rates. I got you.
Yeah, I'm a Chicago girl. No,
all right, so I'm going to remind everybody, and you might be hearing this for the first time. These seven questions, I devised them a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. I'm not stealing anything from anybody. And I actually got 3 right and 4 wrong when I went through these questions. And I'm judging them. And I wrote them.
Oh, shit.
I know.
Pictures on me. Oh, my God.
We don't screw around here.
I might have to take a bathroom break. I'm scared. Okay, no, play it on me. I'm scared.
Well, the big thing is, all you got to do is beat me.
Yeah. Is beat you?
Beat me, so you get over 3 points, and you can feel good about yourself.
Do I get to use my fist? Can I beat you with the fist?
Absolutely.
Ninja!
If you think that's going to score you some extra points, you go right ahead and do that. That would be a first, actually. We haven't had anybody physically assault me or beat me in these questions. So that could be your little twist there. Okay.
A little Roman wrestling. Come on. Let's throw down. Get the toga on. Okay.
So, by all means, if you feel the need to use that, go right ahead and punch right through the microphone through Skype. And hopefully you'll hit me in the face and not some nun talking to somebody in Nigeria. That's happened to me before, like 2 times, maybe 3.
Damn.
Yeah.
Okay, now.
So be careful of the power I have given you. Use it only for good.
Okay.
Now, we have had people score perfect. We have had people score more than perfect.
Oh, damn.
All right. So
they got extra credit?
There's extra credit involved. Absolutely.
Oh, shit. Okay.
You can appeal a decision. So if I say, you didn't get the point, you can appeal that decision. And if I disagree with the reasoning behind the appeal, then not only do you not get the point, you actually lose points.
Oh, damn.
And if you continue to do it at every question, I'm just going to say you get negative infinity.
Oh, damn. Man, you're like not an impartial judge or anything. Damn. Okay.
No,
all right.
No, not.
I'm
no.
I'm here. Okay, I got you. I'm ready. Lay it on me.
I believe you can do it, though. Okay.
Okay. All right.
It's question number one. All right. Let me get my glasses on here.
I was going to say, damn, it was taking you so long.
I'm old. Leave me alone.
Watch the hip.
Not only have I fallen, I can't get up.
Get up. And I just stand there and laugh.
As a good Chicago person should do.
And a big sister, you know, it's not the same.
All right. So your first question is, what is the worst piece of advice that you followed and what was the result?
Oh, damn. Okay, so personal, this is the personal thing. There was one year I was new to Chicago stage managing and I said, hey, there's this theater up in Wisconsin. I would love to try it out. What do you know about the theater? Oh, it's terrible. It's horrible. It's terrible. You wouldn't know. They put their people up in tents and there's mosquitoes everywhere. You don't want that. So I didn't apply for it. I found out later that motherfucker applied for it himself and got it. And it was a beautiful place. I mean, gorgeous, you know, cabins and they provide meals for you. And it's and great. All the great artists go up there. There's great talent that works up there. I'm like, you motherfucker. You sabotage me. So you always got to consider your source before you take the advice. But yeah, that was one time I got screwed out of something.
Okay. For bonus points, do you know where this guy lives so we can go break his kneecap?
I don't know specifically where he lives, but I know he's on Facebook.
Okay. All right.
So but even after he did it, I was like, eh, I get it, you motherfucker. We're still friends.
I do that too. Damn it. Why didn't I think of it first?
Damn it. Damn it.
All right. So we're going to give you a point and a half for that one.
Oh, sweet.
Not bad at all. Not bad.
Not bad at all.
For the implied violence, we're going to toss in an extra half point. So there we go.
Poof.
Implied violence goes far in this.
Oh, see now? Okay, see? I've learned the formula.
All right. Question number two. And, you know, you're at a point and a half right now. Another point and a half, and you're tied with me. And anything above that is cake. So just saying.
Sweet.
Just saying. All right. Question number two. How do you reach out to those who don't consider themselves an artist? And is everyone an artist or have artistic ability?
I think there are a lot of people who are unaware that they're artists. I think that everyone has the potential to be artistic in something. So I think there's a lot of artists who walk around posing as secretaries or lawyers or something else completely. But they have it in them. They might not see it. It might be underdeveloped. They might be scared to let it out, but it's there. It's there. How do I reach out to those people? Well, you know, certainly if I see somebody who's got the potential and they don't see it themselves, I'm going to say something to them. Just straight out. You know, either we're having a conversation about something and I can just tell that they have passion and desire and drive for something, I would definitely encourage them just to go after it. And also trying to work within my own community. You know, there's some people who are neighbors and I had no idea that they did X, Y, or Z. And it's pretty amazing to discover that about people in your own community. You know, so that's pretty exciting. So getting involved in my community is one way that I do that. And doing outreach programs, like when we got to work together on the Vet Art Project.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's something else that it's another way to reach out is to find a group of people that you're passionate about working beside. You know, whether it's volunteering or teaching a class or doing something, there's always going to be a place for you at that table.
Absolutely.
So, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. You got your point. You're good to go.
You're two and a half. Yeah.
Now, if you would have applied some violence in there, you would be tied with me right now. But
see, if I did a ninja kick or something.
There you go.
Damn.
There you go. And folks, you know, when Heather grabs you by the neck and says, "You're a freaking artist and you're going to do this," which is what she did to me in the, you know, big art project, "you will write this fucking play, pal." You know, and then I hopped on, I think it was the red line or the blue line, and you were just, you know, kicking my ass, you know, all through the cars. It was, what's the movie that
exactly.
You know, I was like, okay, I'll write a play. I'm sorry, I'll write a play. Okay. This crazy lady off me. And then years later, here you are.
There you go. There you go.
Everybody needs another in their life.
Aww. Thanks.
That'll be $20.
Oh, I'll pay you later. PayPal.
PayPal.
I get you on brown paper tickets.
Oh, yeah. I love brown paper. I love them. All right. Oh, here's a good one. Okay. Question number three. Is there a question you are afraid to be asked, or is there a question you prefer not to be asked, and why? And if now, you answer it, then we're all going to know.
Oh, now is this like on a personal, like a Heather level, or in the art world?
We'll go with the art world.
Like when somebody asks me, "Do you know any famous people?" Mm-hmm. You know, I don't like name dropping, you know. And there's this expectation that unless you've worked with someone famous, it doesn't count. You know, I did career day at my kids' school. And that's what something that they wanted to know was, you know, what famous people have you worked with? And I'm like, gosh, I've worked with so many people who are genuinely true artists. Mm-hmm. Just because they're not well known doesn't mean they don't do their craft just as well, if not better.
Right.
So to me, they are rock stars, mm-hmm. but they're not a household name. So what, their work doesn't count? So that's a slippery slope for me. You know, and sometimes celebrities come with their own set of hardships too.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I want just green M&Ms, you know.
Do they even make green M&Ms? I don't know.
Oh, they make everything under the rainbow.
Okay. We will investigate this in the case notes, in the show notes.
Dun, dun, dun.
And everyone today that listens gets green M&Ms.
Just in time for St. Patrick's Day.
There we go. Tastes Irish.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. I might give myself a half a point for that because that wasn't really.
I'll admit that wasn't.
Because you know what? As an artist, I'm pretty open to everything.
Yeah.
But me personally, Heather has a different response to that than the artist Heather does.
Gotcha.
So that's, you know, part gotcha. Two of that is a different story. So.
Well, that's season number two when you come back you on go. The show.
There you go. There you go.
Okay, so you're at, let's see here, 1.5, 2. You're at 3 points.
Do, do, do,
you got it. You have tied me. You have tied me.
All right.
We're going to continue on because we haven't got all 7 questions knocked out yet, and you may get some negative points going on here.
Shit. Okay.
Yeah. But question number 4, and this is a tough one.
Okay.
All right. Do you want the math question, or do you want the do you want the philosophy question?
Let's do philosophy.
Philosophy it is. Okay. If you throw yourself at the ground and miss, what are you doing and how do you continue to accomplish this seemingly impossible task?
Damn it, I blinked. I missed it. The moment's over. Don't.
Oh. Shit. Oh. I'm going to give you a huge hint.
Okay.
Okay. What does 42 mean to you?
What does 42 mean to me?
Yes.
42?
Douglas Adams.
Who?
Douglas Adams.
Oh, president?
No.
No. Yeah. No. I don't know.
He was a British writer. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
Oh, shit!
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Throwing yourself at the ground and missing? What are you doing?
I don't know. I've never read it.
No. No, 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 no. You've never read this?
No.
Oh, my God. I have failed you. I'm not going to penalize you for this.
I know. I need to, like, read this. It's on my reading list.
Oh.
So now I've been ashamed and embarrassed into it. See how this works? You can give me a negative one for not reading something I should have read.
Now,
Douglas Adams wrote the book. Yes?
Yeah.
See, I even knew that. Well, you said that, but it didn't click in. It didn't click in. But I'm like, hey, Douglas Adams wrote that book. See, I at least knew who wrote it, right? Yes, I knew the writer.
There you go. I'm going to give you no points. I'm not going to give you negative.
What was the math question?
Oh, well, that would be question number 5.
Oh, shit. Ah! Damn it.
Okay. So, what is the airspeed? And you're a theater person. And if you don't get this, and this was actually playing at my very first cast party after I kissed the most beautiful girl in high school.
Oh, no.
All right. What is the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow? And if possible, show your work.
I don't know.
No.
I knew I was going to get negative points. Okay, tell me. Tell me what I don't know. What am I ignorant of?
You're going to have to turn in your union card for this one.
Oh, shit. What?
Oh, my God. Okay. Monty Python, Holy Grail?
Yes.
You've seen this?
Well, yeah, my husband likes it. So, but I've fallen asleep. Okay. I can't believe I'm going to admit this, but the people I went to high school will know that this is true. I've tried to watch the movie like 6 times and I've fallen asleep every single time during it. Some of them, it was due to intoxication. Some of it was, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think I've made it up to, I'm not dead yet.
Okay. All right. This is, after that, so
yeah. It was in the part that I slept through. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So there's no way you could have known it, but it. The Twitterverse, the Twitter universe is saying that I have to deduct points from this one. So yes. I'm going to have to deduct a half a point.
That's okay. I already told you could take it from me. Okay. That's all right.
I got to take the half point. So now you're at 2.5.
Ah, damn it. Do I get extra credit for knowing that in The Life of Brian, there's that big pukey scene? Do you remember that scene?
Yes, I do. Oh, God.
The big pukey scene. And that also reminds me of the movie Stand By Me, where they do the pie eating contest. Mm-hmm. Both are just, and I'm scared of vomit. So, you know, it's a wonder I'm a mom at all.
Yeah, there
but,
you go.
You know, one of my things is I can't always take the vomit thing. So when I see it on movies, I'm like, ah, it's the worst thing. It's like somebody's cut somebody's head off with a chainsaw. No, it's vomit.
For vomit. Me. Also, The Exorcist must be a wonderful movie.
Oh, there's that one. How could I have not brought that as an example, too? See, there you go.
All right, for the vomit and for the gross out factor, I won't take any points. So you're still at 3 points. You're still tied.
Oh, my God.
Okay, I'll be generous. I mean, you're my big sister.
And I bullshitted my way through that, but that's all right. It's all good.
Hey, that's a good copy. That was entertaining as all hell. You know, we got from Monty Python to The Exorcist and, you know.
Oh, see vomit. Now.
There you go.
6 degrees of separation, baby. I can do it.
It's a beautiful thing.
I can thread that needle, damn it.
All right, okay. So now you have 2 homework assignments. One, you must you must cut down the mightiest forest, mightiest tree in the forest with a herring, which is in Monty Python's Holy Grail. So you got to watch Monty Python's Holy Grail. You got to.
Yeah, I have it on video.
Okay.
I have it on, not VHS. No, I have it on DVD. I was like, oh, maybe I have that on VHS. No.
Well, instead of watching the Super Bowl, because we all know the Patriots are going to win because they're going to cheat.
Oh, dude, and you're out here in bear country. We do not want to see those motherfuckers win.
I know. Well,
it's not that I love the Eagles or anything, but Patriots, no, thank you. Hey,
anybody that boos Santa Claus, I'm all for, you know, because that's what happened in Philly. They actually booed Santa Claus.
Oh, Jesus. What's the world coming to?
That's a beautiful thing. No, you got to boo Santa Claus, you know? All right, so no points were lost, but your homework assignment is you have to watch a Monty Python Holy Grail.
Holy Grail in its entirety and not fall asleep.
Don't fall asleep. Take some Vivarin or many things, whatever you got to do. Whatever you got to do. And then you must read the
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Yes,
I know.
But you got to read the 5-part trilogy.
Oh, fuck, dude. Okay.
It's that funny. It's a 5-part trilogy.
5-part trilogy.
Yeah.
I wonder how many people have read all of that.
Me?
Hmm.
I'm a nerd. I admit it. I have it leather bound with the gold little bookmark thing.
See how literature impacted your life? Oh, bring it back to the art again.
Bring it back to the art again. I read all those books to share them with you and enrich your life more.
We should put them on stage. What do you think?
All 5 books?
We could do a 5-part series of plays.
Okay. Done.
It could be epic theater.
Done and done.
Hitchhiker's Guide.
It's already written, so let's do it. Yeah. Done. Mm-hmm. It's already been done as a play and a radio play. And 2 movies.
Damn, but all 5 plays?
Yeah.
I mean, all 5 books?
Yeah.
God damn it. I am really out of touch with this stuff.
They heavily edited it, on stage and on the movies. But yeah, and the radio plays. But it hasn't been done by you.
Oh, I could pull you're one of your wife's things and do an audiobook.
Yes.
Oh.
There we go. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy as read by Heather Meyer.
Oh, my God.
Done and done. With lighting designed by Tim Bryan. Lighting design for an audiobook. We're going to make it happen.
That's beautiful, man. You know, that podcast was terrific, but I really love the costume and lights the most. That was the best part of it all.
Oh, my God. You know, in just a couple episodes, somebody was saying, Tim, you're the Bob Ross of podcasting. Now I'm the lighting designing and the costume designer for podcasting.
You could do some choreography, too, you know. Everybody loves a dance break.
They do. Oh, my God. I could. You know what? I'll do it with my girls because they love to dance to Elmo when they're watching Sesame Street.
I'll see you now.
There you go. I'm just saying, I hear a road trip coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
Done and done.
I hear that. Well, those girls aren't getting any younger, so I gotta get up there and see them.
Yeah, you got to do it before I take them to Paris. I'm just, they're going to Paris when they're 10. They have no choice. We might get return. We might just go one way and just stay there, depending on what's going on back here. So,
I got a buddy who's in Paris and he's doing. I don't know what project he's doing, but they keep calling him back to reshoot stuff. I'm like, you son of a bitch! I'm back. Oh.
Well, he keeps on fucking it up, so they got to call him back. Oh, we got to reshoot this again.
We got to reshoot that. Oh, no. Did you get the cheese tray? Yeah.
All right. Question number 6. Are you ready?
No, I hope so. God, I've really screwed these last couple up.
That's okay. That's okay.
Play it on me.
You're tied with me. You're not below me, so you're good to go.
All right.
What is the allure to being an artist, and do you live up to the myth, or do you perpetuate the myth of what an artist is?
What now? Come on. That's completely defined by what your definition of an artist is, right?
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Oh, shit. Well, you know, I kind of just support the crazies that make the theater. So in a way, I guess I kind of perpetuate the artists, you know, that what it is to be an artist. It, like, you know, I like to get them drunk and stuff. Don't tell anybody.
And thank you for those 3 bottles of Night Train.
Woo! You know, is in my community, yeah, you kind of can tell I'm an artist because I look a little bit different. You know, I'm not kooky or anything, but I'm just a little different, just enough that it's kind of noticeable. But you know what I think the true artists are.
I'm just having this mental picture of you in my head, and I'm like, what does she mean by that? You can look at
well,
me.
Well, okay. So, like, where I'm at, a lot of people look very similar. Like, they wear the same brand of clothes.
Right.
Right? And they drive the same kind of cars. Mm-hmm. And there's something about that. But I, you know, I live on the other side of the tracks. Mm-hmm. I drive a van. You know, I got really long hair. You know, I'm not a trender. I'm not trending, you know, and sometimes that it makes you stick out like a sore thumb sometimes. But true artists are really humble. They don't tell you they're an artist. They let their work speak for themselves.
Gotcha.
You know, so, you know, there's somebody who's working in a cubicle in an office, but at night they're a beautiful guitar player. You know, but they don't go around, they don't brag about themselves, you know, so I don't know. It really depends on what you think an artist is.
Gotcha.
I'm probably a little bit more talkative than most, so I guess maybe the kookiness again.
There you go.
Yeah. So there you go.
Okay.
But you asked me what was the allure to art. What's the allure to it?
Yeah, what's the allure to being an artist? You know, why are you an artist? You know,
What does it for me? I think having the opportunity to show somebody something that they haven't seen before, or maybe not have considered before, or something that affects them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's just the greatest gift is to hear an audience laugh or react to a moment. Achieving that is kind of that carrot you go after, is kind of that affecting the audience in some way. Telling them a great story so that that's all they think about for the next 24 hours, maybe. And we kind of talked about this earlier too, but it's addictive.
It is.
You know, it's addictive. So there you go. That and shooting heroin, it's all addictive.
I wouldn't know. I'm too busy on Transvestite Tuesdays to do that.
Not going to do the shoot on Saturday, huh?
No, can't do it because, you know, when I get my high heels, they can see the track marks between my toes. So,
oh, my God.
You know, I can't have that, you know? That's my side hustle, kids. That's my side hustle.
Hey, do I get any points for that?
Yes, you do. You get 2 points for that. That was good because you answered the question and then you answered another question that I hadn't even asked. Okay, so you got 2 points on that bad boy. So that brings you up to 5. Yeah, you answered the question and then you answered another question.
Oh, see now. I answered both parts of that question.
Absolutely.
It was a two-parter.
It was a two-parter.
And I didn't even use my ninja skills on it either.
Yeah. Yeah, you didn't need to. You're a professional.
Sleight of hand professional, maybe. Anyways.
Okay, there you go. All right. So, are you ready for your last question?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, here we go. I like to call this the magic wand question. We'll insert some sound effects right now. There we go.
And that was nice. That was amazing.
Folks, it's Marcel Marceau's Walking in the Wind. It's a great hit. Kids love it.
I can see the wind in your hair from here.
Well, you know, it's funny because I just shaved my head 2 days ago. I do that every time I have a surgery. I'm just like, the hell with it. I'm shaving my head. So
shaving my head. It's just easier.
Exactly. Especially how hairy I am. Oh, my God.
You got to coif your hair, but did you shave your back? That's the bigger question.
Well, I haven't had back surgery yet, so no.
Okay.
we're working towards that, so.
Tarzan's still, you know, swinging from the branches back there.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, well, they don't have to attach anything to my back this time, so I'm leaving it. I'm all natural, so I'm good to go.
Well, you got to stay warm somehow. Yeah. So.
Well, I'm getting soft out here on the East Coast. I mean, you know, in Chicago, I'd be in shorts and, you know, going, let the 10 inches come. Take that however you all want.
I'm going to go out back and grill that, you know.
And now I can't, you know, I'm sitting here in a muffler and a sweater and scarves, and I'm, you know, knitting a blanket while I'm talking to you. And, you know, I got a heater on. Yeah, and it's only like 40 degrees out.
Oh.
You know?
You're amazing. It's 4 degrees here.
Well, see, that's why I don't live there anymore. I got tired of it.
But you know what? You want to know what? Yesterday?
Uh-huh.
It was freaking 40 degrees out. Now it's 4.
Oh,
yeah, that's what we've done in the last 24 hours. Hooray!
But it's a dry 4. It's a very dry 4. The only time it's good when it's 4 degrees is if there's no wind whatsoever.
Oh, and you know that's not true because we are in the Windy City.
Yep, never happens. All right, we've delayed this question long enough.
Okay.
If money is no object,
mm-hmm.
time no consideration, resources
mm-hmm.
unlimited,
mm-hmm.
what project would you attempt? And if all negative factors are eliminated, would you allow this to be the only work you are known by?
This project?
Yeah.
Perhaps. Depends on how, you know. I reserve the right to say, I don't know what you're talking about. I would seriously like to do something. Do you know what Whirly Ball is?
I've heard about it. Is it, it's not where it's like a ball with a string attached to a big pole.
No, you're in like a bumper car.
Oh, okay.
And you have a ball. And there's a basketball hoop at each end, and you have like this scoop where you can scoop up the ball as you're driving and throw it at other people, and you can launch it into you're trying to score a basket. But this place is brilliant. It's like, it's got whirly ball in it, it's got bowling in it, it's got a bar, it's got all this stuff. I would like to have something that's kind of like that, that's got like maybe a bowling alley on the first floor. And then on the second floor, like performance spaces and some classrooms. And up on the top floor is all the administrative offices, you know, so the money people can do their thing. But it would be someplace where you could go for entertainment. But on the second floor, you could turn it into like a studio. So we could teach some classes. We could give people that opportunity to try things out for the first time, get their toes wet. Maybe in one bigger space, we would do fully mounted productions. And then, you know, upstairs. I'm from Chicago, so we need a rooftop on the top. So you can party up there. So it's a multi-level entertainment venue that does do focus on theater.
Okay.
You know.
Now, does it need to be in Wrigleyville or does it need to be on the south side? Oh, the true test comes out. If you answer that question wrong, you could lose 4 points.
Well, you know, I'm sort of the person that's like, can't we have the best of both worlds? Can it be somewhere in the middle so everybody can meet there in the middle? Can't we do that? Because, you know, the thing is, if you're on the north side, the people on the south side, they don't want to make the drive up there. The north siders are too scared to go on the south side, you know. So I don't want something in the middle to serve everybody's needs.
That's a very safe answer.
It is a safe answer, but art is supposed to be for everybody. So I got to put it somewhere where it's accessible. I mean, don't ask me to put it in the suburbs because I'm not doing that. It's got to be within the city limits. Okay. And I want like the day glow bowling. So like you turn out the lights and everything glows. I want that glowing bowling down on the first floor going on. And karaoke, I think it would be a good thing. Well, and yeah. Open mic night. Yeah. See, I got all these opportunities at the old bowling alley. Mm-hmm.
We need to make this happen. How are we going to make this happen for you?
I don't know, because it would take making a building or finding a building. So I don't know. I'd have to figure out some grassroots way to get it going on.
Well, you know what? I have an idea, because earlier in the season, we had Ramon Chavez from Salsation Improv Troupe. And he wants to run a telethon.
Mm-hmm.
And so in season two, so that way he can open up his own art school. So in season two, I think what we can do is a telethon.
Mm.
We can do that telethon. And then what we do is, once we get the money from that telethon for Ramon, you let me hold on to the money and you just tell me what you need, and that will suddenly make it into your pocket, and I'll charge Ramon a finder's fee for that money.
Can't Ramon and I work together? Like, he wants to open up an art school, is that what you said?
Yeah.
Can't he come utilize my second floor? Can't we work together on it? Because he's going to need a space, right?
He's going to need a space. He's going to need a space.
Well, and does he like to bowl?
He does like to bowl. He definitely does like to bowl. And he likes to drink and do karaoke, too.
And I'd have a bar there.
There we go. I think that's it.
There's some collaboration and cooperation working on here. See?
It's all about collaboration.
You better believe it, because you don't want to drink alone.
No, no, gotcha.
That's what I'm saying. Friends don't let friends drink alone.
Oh, hell no, of course not. You got your point.
Woohoo! Because the whole collaboration thing, right?
Absolutely.
I pulled in another artist. See, outreach is good.
There you go. That's what it's all about. It's all about outreach, fans. I'm just saying. So you ended up with 6 points. Very respectable.
Not bad. But, you know, I see the places where I need some work.
Yeah. There's a little homework that can be done.
There's a little work.
You know? It was getting a little treacherous there, because I was thinking we might have our first negative score.
Oh, my God. Don't even tell me how embarrassed I'd make myself if I did that. Shoot.
Well, I don't know if you've ever been to the Green Mill and seen the poetry slams up there with Mark Smith.
I haven't seen the poetry slam. I have been to the Green Mill and listened to jazz up there, but have not been there for the spoken art.
I've seen people walk out of there with negative scores.
Oh, see, that's when you get too scared to get up there then. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying.
And you know, at one point in my life, I was like, fuck it. I want to get a negative score. I want to be below zero. And I just never could do it because people were too polite, or they were too intimidated by me. They could have been both.
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
They might have been like, oh, he's a big teddy bear. He's so sweet. We can't give him a zero.
We'll give him a 3, and that's a nice safe score. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Middle of the road. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I live pretty close to the Wisconsin border, and I have to buy, like, my weight in cheese when I go over the border, so they'll let me back.
Well, yeah, you do. Oh, yeah. And cheese curds?
Cheese curds.
The people on the East Coast do not know the beauty of a cheese curd.
Oh, that's a little bit of a sin.
Yeah, they don't. Every time I go, I fill the back seat. That's why I drive to Chicago by myself. Because I fill up the whole back seat in my trunk with cheese curds.
And chicken. What's the place?
From Harold's.
Harold's Chicken. Harold's Chicken.
Not sponsoring this show, but that's okay. You need to go there, get you a three-piece dart, and you'll be fine.
You know what? I am going to have to deduct a point here, because you didn't mention pizza. Chicago-style hot dogs either. So, you're wavering on a point and a half loss there, man.
Oh, wait a minute. How am I losing points?
I'm always keeping score, man. I'm always keeping score.
Okay, folks, you heard it here first. I lost points on my own show. I'm not in control. Oh, my God. Okay.
Timmy, thank you for having me. This was really a fun night. Thank you.
Absolutely, Heather. Absolutely. Do you have any words of wisdom for our folks? Anything about creating more than you consume?
In terms of art?
In terms of art, yeah, absolutely. Yep.
There is no way that you can make too much. There's not an overabundance, because you just have to keep going until you find the thing that works, that's right for you. So in terms of putting it out there, keep putting it out there. Keep putting it out there and have the courage to keep having your voice shine through. Keep doing it. Don't give up.
Perfect. Absolutely. Folks, that was Heather. Fantastic, fantastic person. Go out, see any show that she's working on. You'll see all the links in the show notes here for us. Go check out some theater in Chicago. If you're in Chicago, go check out some theater. What Woo-hoo! Else is there to do besides eat pizza and a hot dog at Portillo's? Okay.
Support your small theaters. Go to the storefronts.
Bingo. Woo-hoo! Absolutely. That's where the best theater is happening.
This has been Cree Art Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. You can always email me, Timothy@CreeArtPodcast.com, to find out more about what it means to create more than you consume. We'll see you next episode. Have a great day.